Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
And I'm Emma, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Hello.
Hello.
Good tidings to you all.
And very good tidings to you. How are you, friend?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
You're better.
Better. Oh dear. Had an interesting week. Basically, my mum came to visit, and which is lovely, obviously. Mm-hmm. She arrived on the Monday. Yay, amazing. Tuesday, she was struck down with a tummy bug. Then Wednesday, we were all fine again. Yay! Thursday, I was struck down with a tummy bug. So now we're just waiting to see if anyone else in the household's gonna get it.
Yeah.
Because I'm fine again today.
Okay.
But yeah, it's fucking rubbish, isn't it?
That is the thing about tummy bugs, is off, like, usually, unless it's quite serious, they're quite short-lived.
Yeah, it was very short-lived. I still don't feel 100% today. I would describe myself as feeling a bit sensitive today.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I'm mostly fine. But I'm just, yeah, okay. We just went to the supermarket because we're going camping tomorrow.
Oh my God, you are absolutely mental.
I know.
Have you seen the weather forecast?
Yes, thank you.
Where are you going?
Dorset.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen the Daily Mail article. Don't go camping.
Why? Fuck. Why is it saying that?
Because of the winds and the flood risks.
Right.
And the driving. People. They're driving to somewhere.
Oh, great.
So, yeah. It doesn't look great, but then when you look at when you dig a bit deeper, it doesn't look that bad. So we're just going to see what it's like tomorrow, and then
yeah, you can always turn around.
Yeah. Oh God, why? You know, it's your only holiday of the entire year / in fact 18 months.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I'm sorry, pal.
It's okay. I'll survive. How are you?
I'm fine. I had a week. It happened. Nothing especially exciting to report.
I had a week.
Yeah, went to the beach today. That was nice.
Yeah, that looked nice.
Yeah. That's kind of, it was fairly uneventful, to be honest.
It was pretty hot, wasn't it?
It was pretty hot.
Roasty, yeah. Toasty.
Yeah, developed. It's funny how, like, in extreme weather situations, and I count this week as fairly extreme, you develop, extreme. Like, new habits.
Yeah.
So, like, my habit was, like, make sure certain windows are open at certain times, and like quite a complicated shutter strategy.
Wow.
Yeah, shutter That's slash blind sense. Strategy.
Wow. You yeah. really worked it out.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I feel by the end, I mean, we've cooled down now, but by the end I feel like I was quite an expert.
I'm impressed.
And like all the conversation on all my WhatsApp groups was about like aircon and heat pumps.
Wow. Yeah, it was all a bit much. Every time I tried to, because I had visitors the whole time. I had visitors last Saturday. I had a different set of visitors on the Sunday. Yeah. And then I had my mum on the month. So I had like visitors, pow, pow, pow. Got to do something. And you know, when everyone comes to visit, they want to go to the beach, don't they?
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. I live very close to a beach. Of course, people want to go to the beach when they come to visit. But when it's like, really fucking hot and you're like, there's no shade on the beach, this is just, actually I start to lose my mind a bit.
Yeah,
I mean, a bit heat crazy.
Yeah, I feel like beach. We went to the beach today. I mean, this is boring conversation for anybody who doesn't live near a beach, but it was perfect beach weather because it was like slightly overcast.
Mm.
And it so it wasn't too hot. Like it was a little bit windy, maybe a little bit too windy for my liking. But it was just like I wasn't concerned at any point that I was going to pass out.
Yeah. This is it. We like to moan about the bad weather in England, but we are very fragile. If you turn the heat on, we're like, oh God, I'm going to die.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Should we talk about this episode before everybody switches off because they're so bored of us?
God's sake, weather bitches, shut up.
Yeah. So we've got Sophie, obviously.
Yes.
Just me with Sophie this time.
Yeah, I didn't know. No Gabs. No, I was hanging out with my mum.
Yeah.
So I missed
it. Okay. It's important. Yeah. I would like to point out that my neighbour has acquired a dog.
Oh.
And aforementioned dog does not stop barking, as you can hear during that recording.
Oh, God. What kind of dog is it, though?
It is a dog that looks exactly like Scooby-Doo.
Amazing.
Yeah.
God, massive. What kind of dog is that? Like a Doberman?
It looks like it could be a Great Dane Doberman cross.
Wow, you haven't actually inquired?
No, because me and my neighbour are not on the best terms.
We're
not best friends because before he got the dog, he loved to play really loud tunes all the time. And
do you think he got the dog to piss you off?
I don't know. Well, if he got that, he basically has like, apart from for like an hour and a half today, has like stopped playing the tunes.
Oh.
I mean, touch wood, like massively touch wood. Mm. But so I think maybe he got the dog and then didn't want to upset the dog, which is quite sweet, really. And I'd rather the dog barking than the really loud tunes rattling my windows.
Okay. Yeah.
So I've just chosen to not say anything.
And you get to look at a cool dog sometimes.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say cute. Cool dog. Is it cute?
I wouldn't call something that big cute. I call it massive.
Oh my God, it's hilarious.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't mind. I'm not like, I don't hate it except when I'm trying to record a podcast.
So it's you and Sophie and Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
And know me.
Yeah, and know you, but also there's like a 5-minute period where Sophie and I are just talking about the television show Grand Designs, which is a British TV show in which usually couples basically like build new houses that are really fancy.
Yeah.
Or like renovate houses.
You should write the marketing lines for Channel 4.
Really fancy houses. And it's hosted by a guy called Kevin MacLeod, and he is really funny.
Dreamy, Kevin MacLeod.
He basically just like walks around these sites like pissing on people's dreams.
Yeah, he's great.
So there's quite a lot of Grand Designs bants in that. Sorry if you're not a Grand Designs watcher, but maybe you should be because it is really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I once served him a coffee.
Did you?
Yeah, just a fun fact.
Great.
Yeah.
Right.
I can go through the list of all the people I've served coffee to over the years, but I won't bother.
Okay. Well, maybe you could just do one person every week.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah? It could become a new feature.
Yeah. Okay. Gabby's hospo years, the celebrity issue.
It'll be like Adam Buxton and Joe Cornish's Tom Cruise story.
Yes.
The story.
Yeah. We're just and like just as disappointing.
More. Yeah.
Anyway, what did you and Sophie talk about apart from Grand Designs?
We just talked about her. She's now, or when we spoke, she was 9 days into her jabs.
Holy shit balls.
Holy shit balls. So just how she's feeling, like what's going on. Obviously awesome. Classic Sophie, just like being really zen about it.
Mm. And self-depreciating.
Yeah. So there's that.
Well, I can't wait to listen because obviously I haven't because I wasn't there. So
yeah, you've got to catch up, pal. And we're also speaking to Sophie Martin, aka the infertile midwife.
Yes, we are. We had quite a few people write in talking about the fact that they work in professions where they have to work with children or women but they're pregnant and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And how fucking difficult it is, and could we kind of talk about it? So we thought, who better to go to in the first instance than Sophie, who is of course a midwife.
Yeah, and who lost her, well, she struggled to conceive in the first place. I mean, she'll talk about it. She struggled to conceive in the first place, and then when she did get pregnant, she lost her twin boys, Cecil and Wilfred, at 21 weeks.
Yeah.
Which is incredible, like really hard.
Really difficult.
Yeah. Love me just saying it, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Like,
it's very hard.
Just completely does not articulate quite how
difficult no,
that situation is.
Yeah. So she has a lot of experience in, I guess, you know, having to go to work and face something that must be incredibly triggering.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we had a great chat with her.
Yeah. And that's the show basically for
that's
this week.
The show, yeah.
But if you want to, well, first of all, we would love it if you were to rate and review the podcast.
Yeah, just do it, guys.
Because that helps other people to find it.
It does.
And we would also love it if you sent us a little message just to say, hey, right?
Yeah.
So you can find us on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative.
Or Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
Or you can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
And as we will soon, in a few weeks, we're going to be wrapping this series up. You should sign up to our newsletter, which we'll get going again after we finish this series.
It is a weekly newsletter when we are not doing a podcast every week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good. I mean, I'm very biased, but
no, I'd say it's really great.
I would say it's really good.
It's like brilliant.
I think it's one of the best newsletters in the world.
Yeah, so do I. And you can sign up to that if you go to our website. It's bigfatnegative.com. And then top right, there's a little thing, little button that says newsletter. And also on that website, you can get yourself some BFM merch.
Yep. You can get a t-shirt that says, just relax. Or you can, of course, pre-order a book.
Oh yeah, which, forgot about that little nugget. Yeah,
I know. I mean, we're just going to keep mentioning it. Obviously, I think it's good for us to keep mentioning it.
Yeah,
if only for ourselves.
Yeah,
we spent a lot of time on it.
Yeah,
we're very proud of it. It is informative and it is funny.
Yeah, and it's out in January.
It is indeed
in the UK.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. Right? We should shut up now.
Yeah, I think that's all the like requests. God, people turn on this podcast like ready to listen to some people like having a nice time. And then they're just like, fucking hell.
Hey.
All these tasks.
Yeah.
Well, all these requests.
Know. Top bants as well though, mate.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of bants.
Weather
I wonder bants. If anybody uses the word bants anymore.
Possibly not. Maybe time to retire it.
Maybe. Well, maybe it just describes our oeuvre.
Let's all ponder that for the next week. If anyone's got any ideas what we should call our bants instead of bants, please also email us bigfatnegativepodcast@gmail.com.
In the meantime, please enjoy the show. So, mate.
Hello.
Just you and me today.
I know. We miss you, Gabs.
We miss Gabs, but we'll press on. We'll
press
try.
On.
We'll yeah.
Soldier through.
So, mate, you've been shooting up recently?
I have, yeah. I mean, about 20 minutes ago.
Oh, mate.
Yeah,
how
fresh.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm a smorgasbord of emotions.
Really?
Yeah, but it's not dire. It's not dire. So I'm in week two of stims, as I've learned the, you know, trendy shorthand for them is.
Yeah, using the lingo.
Using the lingo. So I am on day 9 of injections today. So week one was, well, the first 4 days were just Gonal F.
Right.
And then started, I never know how to pronounce it, Firmidil?
Yeah, let's say it's that.
Yeah. Fire Maidel.
That's how it's spelled.
Pyramidal, yeah. That sounds good. Anyway, that one, started 5 days ago. And week one, I was like, oh, this is pretty chill. I just feel, to be honest, I just felt like I was lightly stoned for a couple of days.
And that's probably just like all the emotions surrounding what you're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, just being more mindful of, you know, feeling tired.
Yeah.
That's kind of drifting around, walking the dog, like, oh, the park is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, this is quite nice. It's a big process. And then I think since Friday, I don't know if it's the psychosomatic thing of having two different drugs knocking about, or just, you know, gone left, catching up, whatever. I'm just, you know, now really feeling it. I went on Saturday, we met up with some friends and, you know, just walked around a park for 2 hours. And then we'd driven there. As soon as I got back in the car, I was like, whoa, okay, I'm absolutely exhausted now. And since then I've been on a diet of naps, chilling out, more naps, doing things in short bursts. And but today I would say is my peak emotion day. Today I'm very, very lucky in that I'm just walking distance from my fertility center. About 25-minute walk. So I was walking back listening to this poetry podcast, and there was this lovely poem about someone eating a peach, and I was like, oh my god, I think I'm gonna cry. So beautiful. And I had to put my sunglasses on because I was just like, I've got tears in my eyes. I just kept listening to it being like, peaches are so nice. Obviously it had layers of other meaning, but you know.
Do you know what, I think when I was doing my stims I actually wrote some poetry.
Oh nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Maybe we should have a kind of a little
a reading,
a poetry reading.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is good to release, I think, release emotion.
Yeah, I think I was like, I want to write something, but I don't have the energy to like go long form right now.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to write like what I can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm finding writing really useful. Sometimes it's formed stuff, but sometimes it's just a complete splurge, which I think is good.
Yeah.
And yeah, and that's fine. And then, you know, the injections themselves, I think because it's real now, because mm-hmm. because we're physically doing it and I'm in it, it's less intense than I had anticipated.
Yeah. Are you being quite like, you've got your set routine, like you're not leaving the house really during the times that you're supposed to be injecting and stuff?
Oh yeah, I mean, we're not really leaving the house unless we have to anyway, because you know, COVID infection rates are so high at the minute
everywhere.
Yeah, so Mr. Sophie is going into the office, but he's only there with one other person,
right,
and that's just for a few days this week because he has to be.
Yeah,
but yeah, other than that, we're staying in, you know, like seen a couple of friends outdoors, but literally, you know, in parks. So mm-hmm. that makes the routine a lot easier to stick to. I've got alarms that go off for everything. Like 6 p.m. is my alarm called dinner, which is a reminder to make dinner so that when I hit my 6:30 alarm that reminds me to eat dinner, I've got something to eat.
Oh my God. I mean, I love it. I'm just micromanaging your life.
Yeah, totally. Got my alarm then to take my supplements. Obviously, I don't, you know, it's ridiculous to set an alarm to do my injections because there's no way in hell I'm going to forget. But I've set an alarm just in case.
Yeah, mate.
Yeah, and everything is super scheduled. I've got a checklist for everything on the fridge, which I check off every day. Like
I did that. I did exactly that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like printed out a spreadsheet basically.
Yes. Yeah. I've drawn myself a spreadsheet.
Yeah. Lovely. Yeah. I'm so proud. Yeah. I'm so proud that you're the me school of injections rather than the Gabby like chilled out school of injections.
But I think for me, ticking things off, I mean, first of all, it appeals to me because I'm quite a kind of, you know, gold star chart person.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I like that too about you. It's a quality I admire.
So it appeals to me on that level. But also I think if I was trying to remember it all in my head, that would stress me out because I'd get halfway through the day and be like, oh shit, I've forgotten this.
Yeah.
So because I'm at home basically the whole time, it just means that I know that I've done the stuff I meant to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it settles the mind.
Yeah, it does. It does for me. Yeah,
yeah. I feel like if Gabby was here, she'd be like, guys, you need to chill out.
Yeah.
But I really liked that I had like my set routine. Like I even had all my stuff laid out on the kitchen table.
Yeah.
Ready to go. Yeah, nice. Have you come across any little like tips? Any things that kind of surprised you or that like?
I don't know, actually. I think just like as much rest as possible.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like you were saying, it is a physical thing, but it's also an emotional thing because it's so weighted.
Yeah.
And I think I'm just trying to let that come. You know, like most of my past life has been, I don't know, I'm not very good at expressing negative emotions and letting them come. I'm like, no, everything's fine. I've got nothing to complain about. I'm perfectly happy and lucky. And actually, I'm realizing with this, you know, it's fine. You just got to let it out because it's not a good time to be trying to squash stuff down. Last week, I was feeling like, God, I am really lucky on loads of fronts. You know, this is so far quite uncomplicated. And, you know, like, I don't know, lots of different things make me feel lucky. This week, I've been a bit more like, it is a bit unfair. And then being like, oh, no, you're still a lucky one. And then thinking, actually, no, it's all right to feel a bit hard done by. You know, I'm meant to be going, you know, I'd in January booked a long weekend with all my mates this weekend that I had like literally booked the Airbnb for and I can't go on it. So, you know, and I'm like, it is all right to feel a bit put out by that. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't have to be chill about everything.
I think that's absolutely fine. It's funny because I went for lunch with some people last weekend who were like, they're probably about 2 weeks behind you. So they're going to start stims like now in a week's time. And at the end, the lady said, how do you stay positive through this? And I was like, I don't think you have to stay positive.
I think
what you need to know is that whatever your emotional situation, it doesn't affect what's happening in your body.
Just let it flow.
Let it all
flow. Again, I think writing stuff to yourself is quite useful for that because, you know, you don't necessarily want to pour it all out to everyone else.
Yeah.
But it's fine to as well. You know, it's totally fine. I've got lots of people checking in, which is really nice, and lots of people being really supportive. But it's fine just to write stuff to yourself as well.
Yeah, it is. Because sometimes it helps you like untangle everything.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally. And I also keep singing Que Sera Sera to myself.
Is that your mantra?
Yeah. And then actually at the beginning of it, when I was in my first couple of days, gone left, slightly stoned phase, I was like, do you know what? This is my mantra. This is so good. I'm gonna get a piece of art. I'm gonna make a piece of art that says Que Sera Sera. Then I was like, no, I'm gonna commission someone. And I got in touch with this artist who I really love, who does these amazing, she kind of paints on glass and does these amazing like gold embossed lettering things. And I was like, I'm just gonna do it. And this is gonna be my for the rest of my life. Whatever happens, Que Sera Sera, what will be, will be. But she hasn't actually replied to me, so probably just as well. I can't, I mean, she's very popular, so I don't think it would be cheap.
That's great.
And then I looked on Instagram, I was like, maybe I could just get a print of this, and there's loads, obviously. But most of them don't have the accent over the A for Sera, which is someone who, you know, did learn how to write and speak Spanish at quite a basic level. I was like, I feel like I'm letting the entire Spanish speaking community of the world down if I go for the font I like, but without the correctly accented subject. So these are the little debates I've been having in my head.
Yeah, you can't.
Along with what's the future of my life going to be?
Yeah, I mean, it would annoy me if I had a print of something and it wasn't right around my house.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to walk past it. So
we're writers, mate. We're writers and editors. You know, there's got to be grammatical.
Yeah, it's got to be
grammatical perfection.
Well, at least we know what to get you. Okay, that's cool. So how, like, physically, how have you started to kind of feel your ovaries yet?
Yes. Yeah. Pretty bloated.
Yeah.
And also the breathing exercises I'm doing, I'm trying to really focus my attention there and trying to visualize what's happening there. So I'm paying them much more attention than I usually would. I'm much more conscious of them. And I do feel quite bloated, and I'm trying not to bend and twist so much.
Have you got much bruising?
Not too bad, actually, like a little bit, but I normally bruise I'm quite clumsy as well, so I normally like brush past a table and then have a massive bruise for 4 weeks.
Same.
And surprisingly it's not too heinous.
Oh, that's good, because I just had these like purple marks all over me.
Yeah.
And are you doing all your injections? Is Mr. Sophie? I was going to say Mr. Sophie's.
Mr. Gabby's welcome to do some, but I don't know how he do it from a COVID-safe social distance.
No,
Mr. Sophie is doing them all, and he's been really keen to do it actually, because I think he, you know, because we're in a partnership doing this, he wants to play a part in it, and I totally respect that. You know, I was quite keen to, you know, I'm quite independent, and I was like, I really want to do some of this myself just to prove to myself I can do it. But actually that's not really important at all.
No, and I was exactly the same.
Yeah, and he's great at it, and he's on the case, and you know, it's, I don't know, it's good that we can do it together as we're two people doing it. But I think, you know, it's a lot of, you know, it's pressure for him as well. I think because I'm, you know, I've told my team at work about it. I'm telling people quite freely now, actually, that I'm doing it.
That's great.
Which is quite freeing in a way. And also I'm trying to, you know, it shouldn't be a stigmatized thing. It should be something we can talk about. Not to say everyone's in a situation where they can just say, oh, I'm doing IVF, so forgive me if I'm a bit tired or out of it. But I'm lucky that I've got quite a supportive team. So I've kind of given myself permission to take all the time off and rest I need. Mm-hmm. You know, I've worked there 5 years. I've put in the hard graft. And, you know, and because I'm doing breathing exercises every day, and because I've got my little tick list I work through, I'm feeling quite chill. Whereas I think he's still having to work at full pace. You know, it's probably, in a way, it's probably more stressful for him at this point.
Yeah, I think when you're going through it, you're just going through it. Whereas when you kind of look back, you're like, oh, that was actually an incredibly tense and horrible time. But also like a time that, I mean, certainly for John and I, like we were kind of unusually close, probably.
Yeah. And particularly because we can't really get out and about that much. You know, we're watching a lot of Grand Designs. Had a little cry at Grand Designs at the weekend.
Oh, no, which one was it?
It was this one. Oh, God knows if you'll be able to pick it out from this, because it's quite a familiar narrative. Yeah, they built a really nice house. They renovated.
Did she get pregnant halfway through?
No. I think they were childless. Actually, they were a couple, straight couple. And I think they were childless, but I didn't really clock that when I was watching it. But then when I got to the end and I realized that they had, you know, they had moved to Cornwall anew, and they were saying, oh, you know, we won't be locals for 30 years. But then because they'd restored this completely run down mill that was just, you know, it was a wreck. They felt really strongly about the building. They felt really connected to the building. And then they were talking about, you know, kind of giving the history of the building back to the local community, and giving, they referred to the building as her, which I found really endearing. And I got really into in my hyper-emotional state. And they were saying, you know, we've given her another 150 years at least, hopefully. And lots of people in the community seem really happy that she's back. And then I got really emotional thinking that they'd done this amazing thing to like give something with such an amazing history back to the future and the community. Mm. And then afterwards, I actually wrote about it because I was like, why am I finding this so emotional? I was like, oh, actually, in my mind, I mean, they might well have a family, I don't know. But in my mind, I was like, oh, maybe it's, you know, because I see this as something that I would love to do if, you know, we don't end up having children. What a wonderful way to connect yourself to the future.
Oh.
But then I watched a few more episodes and I was like, fucking hell, Grand Designs. Like, I don't think I've got the minerals for it. I'll plant a time capsule somewhere.
I've got to say, like, I mean, slightly off topic, but we bought this house that we're supposed to be renovating. And I just keep watching Grand Designs and being like, ooh, does that mean like...
Maybe I need to spend £37,000 on windows.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm like looking at my income and then looking. You know when they're like... talking to Kevin at the end and he's like, and did you go over budget? And they're like, yes. And they're like, he's like, how much did you go over budget by? And they're like, £250,000. Yeah. And you're like, where did you get an extra £250,000? Yeah, like, where did you find it? Did you find it down the back of the sofa?
Yeah. And I love how Kevin is such a shit stirrer as well, because he always knows they're going to go over budget. He's like, look, I've been doing this show for 20 years. There's no way. No one has ever stuck to their budget, ever. Yeah. You know, they're like, we think we could do the whole thing for 97,000. He's like, but look at it. It's a complete wreck. I mean, you ever think you've wasted a lot of money on really an old wreck, on a bad plot. And that's a very ambitious amount to completely rebuild it.
And you haven't employed an architect.
Yeah, does nothing to de-stress the situation.
My absolute favourites are the ones where you've got like an older couple and they've hired like an architect and they've built a really gorgeous like gleaming glass and steel building that's, you know, it's on a single story, so it's kind of future-proofed for them, but it's really modernist and it's really like gorgeous. And then they just put in a whole load of like ancient mahogany furniture. Just looks so out of place, and it always makes me laugh when Kevin's walking around being like, oh.
And you always know it's a bit of a doozy when he's like, this isn't to my taste. And it's not the aesthetic I would have chosen, but it works for them. And that's really what matters. Like, Kevin, I'm so glad that you don't work in the field of fertility. Could you imagine him?
Hey, that was top presenting just then, bringing it back to the subject. Well done.
You seem to have bitten off quite a lot here with these double injections. Are you sure you're going to be able to handle it all, given the other pressures you're under?
Go left, not to my taste.
It's not to my taste. Protein powder for breakfast, eh? Ooh, some people would say that's revolting.
But it works for them, and that's what matters. Yeah. Hey, so when's your next scan?
Next scan on Friday. So I had one this morning.
Oh, did you? And what did that? You've left that, buried the lead there a bit, mate. That till the end.
So this morning, it scans every other day, isn't it? But things are looking pretty good. Doctor seemed happy. Lots of dots on the chart.
Great.
None have yet crossed the line, which means that they're ready. But lots of dots on the chart. I don't really know what a good number is.
No, and numbers don't matter.
I was going to say, let's not even talk about them because it's different for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But all I care about was both the nurse and the doctor were reassuring. So I left feeling fine.
Great. Well, so next time we speak to you, I think you'll probably have had your egg collection, won't you?
Yes, that's the plan. Should be having it in under a week.
That is some exciting shit.
Yeah.
And how are you feeling about that? How are you feeling about like going in and going under heavy sedation?
Yeah, feeling all right about that. You know, I've been under general anaesthetic before, so. Yeah.
It basically is that.
Issues. Yeah, and you recommend it very highly, don't you? You love the drugs that you get for this process.
I think I'm like, I've talked about it so many times now, but yeah, it's really great.
Yeah. We'll see. Throw a few more pharmaceuticals into the mix. Why not? Let's see what happens.
Yeah, mate.
So that is all Cool. And I've also decided, so that will fall on Monday or Tuesday, but I've decided to take a long, I had originally booked in a long weekend to go away for this holiday I'm not going to take. Cancelled it. And then I was like, do you know what? Actually, I do need just a bit of a break and I want to go and feeling chill. So rebooked it. So hopefully it will be in quite relaxed state for it. And then, awesome. You know, probably spend the next 5 days completely freaking out.
Yeah, of course. As yep. we all do. Waiting for yeah. the phone calls.
Yeah.
All right, mate. You have a great couple of weeks and we'll speak to you from the other side, I guess.
Thanks. Thanks.
Good luck, pal.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Sophie, hello.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Hey, yeah. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for coming indeed.
I feel like this one is long overdue. This comes under the category of we should have done this sooner.
Yep.
Well, you know, busy lives and things like that. But we're finally here.
We are finally here. So obviously you've got a real story, but we're here to talk about other stuff, right? So can you tell us about your journey, but quite briefly?
Well, that is a challenge.
That's your first challenge.
Yeah, go on, hit us.
Okay, so rapid fire story of the last 4 years. Oh, I can do it in about one sentence, which is tried to have a baby, couldn't do it, then had two babies very prematurely and they died, then did 5 more rounds of IVF and now having another baby.
Oh wow, that was really quick. A.
I mean, that was a real nutshell.
B. I skipped over a lot of detail.
Yeah, I'm going to bring you back into parts of that. Just so yeah, do you want to tell us about when you obviously you were struggling to conceive? Was it how quickly did you conceive the twins?
So we were trying for a year before we had IVF. So actually we started IVF quite quickly.
And then, like, obviously you conceived the twins and then you lost them. Like, can you just talk us through, like, what happened, your kind of emotional state, like, everything?
Yeah, so obviously it was very quick. So I just went into labour overnight, so I didn't really have like any warning signs really that was going to happen. It was, you know, completely out of the blue. And obviously it was just completely devastating. I think I had been very nervous the whole pregnancy anyway, just because of having IVF and things like that. And
yeah.
And so I never, you know, a lot of people do get to 12 weeks and feel a sense of kind of relief. And I never felt that. So I was already quite anxious at the time. So yeah, it was obviously just the most devastating thing and like a huge defining point in my life. I think you can't live through something like that and not be changed by it. It was so hard. And even now I sometimes think, God, did that actually happen?
So your little boys are called Cecil and Wilfred. And you went into labour at 23 weeks, am I right?
Yeah, 21 weeks.
21 weeks.
Gosh.
So what kind of happened after they were born? Can you talk us through that a bit?
Like, do you mean the immediate aftermath or?
Yeah, like what I mean, firstly, what's going on in your head? like you're giving birth to two little boys, what's happening in your head and then what happens afterwards?
So I obviously knew that the gestation was too early, that they would not be able to be resuscitated.
Because you're a midwife.
Yeah. And so I knew that they were just going to die. And that was awful, just knowing that as soon as they were born, that would be the end, that they would die. So they did live for 90 minutes, which was, I was actually quite shocked by that. I wasn't expecting them to live for so long, or I wasn't even sure if they would live through the labour, but the labour was very quick. And
okay,
then we just spent some time with them, and obviously, you know, it's just the same as a normal labour, you still have to give birth to the placenta and things like that. And I would say in the immediate aftermath I was very numb, very very numb. There's so many emotions, your brain kind of switches off.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's, you know, it's such a horrible, devastating loss. How did you, obviously kept going. How did you pick yourself up eventually?
It's a really funny question, because you don't really have any other choice. You know, like the world keeps turning, you keep living. And even though it feels like you might never find a way out of it, actually, every day that passes is a day that's passed. And yeah, I mean, I don't really have an answer. It just, the world kept turning and I had to keep going with it.
You talk about it a lot on social media, which is amazing, from our point of view, to just see somebody who's being so open about them. You talk about their names a lot, which I think is really, I've heard is really important in the grieving process. Has that helped you through? Has that made you kind of feel stronger?
I think like writing or talking about things for me is a really good way of helping to process them. Like talking about their names is really important, because they don't have very much else. And they were like just tiny, tiny people. And I think when we talk about baby loss, a lot of people think about, and I hate that term, but like, a pregnancy loss, but it wasn't just a pregnancy. It was two human beings who, we were really excited for and, loved very much. And actually it wasn't just us who was excited for them. You know, it was all of our families as well, knowing that we, had such a struggle to get there in the first place. So then losing them was, really hard, not just for us, but for everyone.
God, absolutely. Is there anything that you could pinpoint that you did at the time that you're kind of glad you did in retrospect, in terms of, memorialising them, or anything that you did, or anything that you maybe didn't do that you wish you had?
I'm really glad that we took loads of photos. And actually, we had a photographer from a charity called Remember My Baby. And they are a charity which comes and takes photos of babies that have died. And I'm really glad we had all of those photos, because they are just really precious. And the midwives did things like hand and footprints. So having all of those things is really, really special. I don't think there's anything that I wouldn't have done, I think. Just having the opportunity to make all those little memories was really special.
It's interesting that you talk about the photos, because obviously the Chrissy Teigen thing happens. We don't know what gestation she was, but she lost her baby under fairly similar circumstances, posted a load of photos that had been taken during her labour and got quite a backlash. Did that make you feel a bit ick?
Yeah, I mean, she did an incredible thing by sharing that, and obviously it's very sad that that happened to her. But someone with such a high profile sharing something so devastating, I think, is incredible, because it's really supportive for me and other women who've had to live through that. And yeah, I think it's horrible that people were so offended by those photos. I mean, she didn't even share a photo of the baby. And I do understand that, it can be distressing to see photos of babies that have died, obviously, because the entire thing is distressing. Not just the photos, like living through that, but those photos, I don't have any photos of the labour, but I've got photos of us afterwards and things like that. And I find it difficult to look at them sometimes, or some of the photos where you can see that James and I are upset are hard to look at. but at the same time, they are still really precious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they, you know, they might help other people to feel less alone. And that's a lot about what we're all doing here. And so, yeah, I think by sharing those, they are difficult to see, but they're probably helping quite a few people.
Yeah, and also, like, I have got photos that I wouldn't share or that are quite personal to James and I. And I think what feedback I have had is that women have... So I've had a lot of women say to me that they were frightened to see their baby because they weren't sure what it was going to look like. But having seen my mm-hmm. photos, they felt less frightened and things like that, which is really, yeah, moving.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we spoke to Julia Bueno, who just sing the praises of every like 5 minutes on this podcast. Mm-hmm. But I think she lost her baby under very similar circumstances as well. And I think she was asked whether she wanted to see her baby and she said no. This is like a long time ago.
Yeah, I think I've read that in the book.
And has said she regrets it.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I think it is a really personal decision, isn't it? And I do understand that you make a decision at the time and then there's no going back, you know, once that's happened, you know, once you've left the hospital and things like that, you know, there aren't lots of opportunities to go back and see your baby and things like that. But I don't think anyone should feel kind of ashamed if they weren't able to see that, you know, if they didn't feel strong enough to see their baby. I don't think you should feel bad for that. But I think, yeah, that's why I do feel it's really important to share photos of Cecil and Wilfred, even though it is distressing. Mm. But actually, they're, you know, they're just miniature people. That was literally it. They're just a baby, but in miniature.
So one of the reasons that we wanted to chat to you is because of what you do, what your profession is. But I think before we get to that, can we maybe hear what's happened more recently?
I am having another baby. That is the most recent development in the 4-year saga of Sophie Tries to Have a Baby.
It's going to be a great book. So you embarked on IVF again?
Yeah, so I was really desperate to start IVF straight away after I had the twins. And I think it's a fairly normal reaction for people to want to have another baby straight away, just because you mm-hmm. want something else to focus on. But
yeah.
It was not the case that basically we had to wait ages to do IVF. I ended up having like quite a few operations and it was just tedious and frustrating. So I ended up doing 5 more rounds of IVF before I got pregnant again. And it actually took nearly another 2 years to get pregnant again, which was long.
Did you do embryo banking?
Yeah, I did. So I did 4.
Have I made that up?
No. Yeah, I did that. So I did one round kind of in the November. I had them in the April and then I did a round in November. And that was a complete disaster. We didn't get anything to transfer, nothing even fertilised. So then we kind of had to start again from scratch and we changed clinics and did loads of like tests and things like that, and then we decided to do embryo banking. Then obviously COVID hit, so we had to delay that by a few months. And then I did 4 rounds back to back of embryo banking.
So embryo banking is where you get as many embryos as you can, so you just do loads of egg collections.
And then
start thinking about transfers like later after that.
Yeah, so I did 4 egg collections. So I did, at the end of that, I did do 1 fresh transfer that failed. And then I did a frozen transfer next time, which is the one that worked.
And the operations that you had in between, were they to do with the loss or were they separate? Was it kind of something that had been flagged?
Yeah, so I ended up having retained placenta after I gave birth to the twins. So I passed the placenta as usual, but a few weeks after the birth, I think it was 5 weeks later, I was still bleeding quite heavily. And I laugh at this now, but it is quite ridiculous that I'm a midwife and I didn't even think that something was wrong. But I think I was just so kind of in this grief bubble Anyway, it was like a switch flicked, and all of a sudden I realised that the bleeding was far too heavy. And I actually thought I was going to bleed to death, which sounds so dramatic when I say it out loud. But I said to James, I can't go to bed tonight, because if I go to bed, I'll just hemorrhage. I didn't. Obviously, we just went to A&E. So I had to have an operation.
It's so frightening there that you had to think that, you know.
It was all of a sudden like my brain kicked into gear and I was thinking like a midwife again, of like, this is not normal and something bad is going to happen. Because that could have happened. Thankfully, it didn't.
Yeah. Good job. Good job the brain came back.
Yeah, thank God for that. So I had to have an operation to remove that bit of placenta, which didn't work. I actually ended up having this piece of placenta for 11 weeks, which I feel like is a record. Gosh. I've never spoken to anyone else who's had a piece of placenta that long. So that was one operation. And then I had a secondary operation to have, because I've got a suture in my cervix, which I had put in before we did the IVF again.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so it's. I think we should probably just mention that. So what the reason you went into labour so early was because of what used to be called an incompetent cervix, and you can probably now tell me what the real term is.
I know that is still what we call it, unfortunately.
We still call it.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, a lot of people find it quite offensive. I feel personally that my cervix was extremely incompetent, and I'm pretty mad at it. So
I've had words with it.
Yeah, we've had words. We're not friends. So for me personally, I don't.
You've given it its final warning.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, we are not on good terms. But I know, I understand how that phrase can be really offensive. But for me, I just feel like, yeah, well, that nailed it really, because it didn't do the job it was supposed to do.
No.
Okay. A lot of listeners actually write in saying, I'm a teacher, or I work with kids, or I'm a midwife. We've had a few midwives write in and say, you know, I now can't have a baby and I'm really struggling, because every day I'm working with babies, I'm working with children, and I'm really finding it hard. How has it been for you doing that job as a midwife?
I've had ups and downs, obviously, but mostly I do really love my job. And like all jobs, you've got days where you don't like it and days that you do really like it. Obviously, when you're already having a down day, having infertility on top of that was not particularly enjoyable. But on the whole, I just really didn't want infertility to take something else away from me, because I felt like it had taken so much already. So if it kind of ruined my job for me as well, then in a way I felt like infertility was winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. An interesting point.
When I was really struggling, I got really obsessed with people, because I lived in Notting Hill. I got really obsessed with the incredibly posh people that I would see walking down the street, ignoring their kids while they were on their mobile phones. And like, why did they get to be parents and I didn't? Because I would never be on my mobile phone with a kid. Never, ever, ever. Do you ever get anything like that? Like a kind of obsession with people who you feel kind of super envious of?
I mean, not in a work setting really, just because I found it quite easy to switch off when I was at work. But I guess on the whole, I always find it frustrating when people have been married not as long as I have and have had a baby. I don't know why, but that would be a thing that I always found difficult.
Did you ever have you managed to stop birth being triggering for you? Because I imagine that, I don't know, for most people it maybe would become a huge trigger, but obviously you deal with it every day in work. Have you managed to kind of make that okay? And if so, how did you do it?
So there's, being a midwife, you can work in loads of different settings. And actually my least favourite setting was the postnatal ward. So that was always kind of the thing I found the hardest, rather than birth. Like, I find birth exciting and dynamic and, you know, fascinating, whereas the postnatal ward, I don't love working there. So that, I when that I found a particularly stressful point in my fertility journey. That was when we were in the lead up to like our first round of IVF, and I felt really helpless in terms of my fertility journey. Mm-hmm. And then I also wasn't loving the area I was working as well. So it felt like a really awful combination. Whereas when I was working somewhere that I really enjoyed, so like I love being a community midwife, I liked working on the birth centre, actually I found it was easier to cope with the fertility related things because I was happier in my job in the first place.
Yeah. Did you ever take courage from the fact that, you know, you must have had mums come in and say this is an IVF baby?
Oh, all the time. It's like the demographic where I work, I work in London, and there's in particular the area that I work in is very affluent and a lot of older mothers and a lot of IVF. So I just love speaking to people about IVF, but I do, yeah, I would always kind of be quizzing people, I guess, or like, you know, taking a real interest in their story if they had had an IVF baby.
I was always disappointed by how normal I was when I announced very proudly that it was IVF the whole time. Everyone's like, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, get over yourself. Know. Yeah, we know, we know. And everyone else, like, treat me, I am special.
Yeah, I think people are, I mean, the amount of women that I would see on a daily basis who've had IVF is unbelievable, really.
Yeah, I bet. So, I mean, is there anything that you can say, like, to other people who are maybe in the kind of jobs where they're struggling because of what they do and because what that bumps them up with every day? Is there any kind of advice that you'd give them to, like, cope? Obviously, your situation's quite unique. Everyone's situation is, but is there anything you could say?
So for me, it was finding the bits of the job that I really loved. And I am fortunate when you're a midwife, you can work in lots of different settings. So, you know, I don't work on the postnatal ward anymore because I don't enjoy it. Whereas if you're a teacher, you don't really have that option to work somewhere else, do you? So I would, for me, it was, yeah, just trying to find the joy. Or also, I guess, again, fairly specific to being a midwife, but I would also use it as like a way of being a better midwife. So understanding people who've had fertility journeys. And then also, yeah, as I found like my own little fact finding mission. So I would ask people which clinics they went to, or like where, you know, did they have any good recommendations and stuff like that? A, because they like talking about it, but also I found it was super interesting.
Have you ever considered kind of retraining and going into the infertility side?
Yes, but I think I love kind of being a midwife too much. And then I did say after my last round of IVF that I never want to step foot in a fertility clinic again. Not because it was anything to do with that round, but just because I was so sick of being infertile.
I mean, we all spend a lot of time in those waiting rooms, right? Do we want to see them anymore?
Best places on earth.
Sophie, you mentioned something to us earlier. I don't know if you might not want to talk about this, but I think it's possibly worth saying just so people are aware of what they say to people. You were saying that there's been some insensitive comments since you've had your successful pregnancy this time around.
Yeah, so, you know, a bit like just relax, which we all hate when we're trying to get pregnant. I think since I've been pregnant, there's been some kind of well-meaning comments, but they kind of have struck a nerve. So we were talking earlier about a lot of people have said to me, oh, just the one baby this time, and that's been hugely hurtful. Although it was not ever meant maliciously, it has been very upsetting. Or you know, people mean very well, or you know, they say, well, you know, different pregnancy this time, so everything will be fine. And actually, that's been quite difficult, because how does anyone know that?
I guess it's one of those things, isn't it? And like, you know, kind of almost kind of making you feel responsible for having had to try to carry twins when it wasn't even that you'd transferred double embryos in the first place, right?
Yeah, so it just made me feel like, oh, I messed up with Cecil and Wilfred, and then because obviously I'd gone into early labour, but then also I felt like inadequate this time round because I was, and I'm doing air quotes here, but only having one baby this time. And, you know, there's nothing only about having one baby. That is very normal to have one baby. Whereas now,
yeah,
it made me feel like, oh God, like I've not done enough. I'm only having one. Why aren't I having two?
Yeah, I should be having octuplets.
Yeah, yeah, which is ridiculous, really, because one at a time is perfectly fine.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's hard, isn't it? I mean, so much. We all talk so much about what people should and shouldn't say, and I think I just think, yeah, hearing that from you hopefully is maybe useful to some people.
One thing that I did find quite interesting was that you did a post recently about how the way people have spoken to you during your pregnancy has made you really reflect about how you speak to people in your professional life.
Yeah, and that's definitely something that infertility and loss has really made me think about, and also just reflect on all the completely stupid things that I have said to people, because, you know, and someone said this quote to me the other day, which I love, and it's, when you know better, you do better. And I thought that was so brilliant, because I, you know, when I'm working as midwife, I always try and be the best midwife I can be and treat people kindly and want to say the right thing. And then it's only when I've lived through infertility, I've thought about, oh God, I've said loads of stupid things and that poor person's probably wanted to punch me in the face, or, you know, like, you know, along the lines of just relax. I've probably said all of those things to other people because I didn't know any better.
Yeah, of course. And I think we all do it. And I still do it. Like, every now and then I will be speaking to somebody that I know has struggled and I will say something so stupid that I will hate myself afterwards. I think it's just human. It's a human thing.
Yeah, I think we're all, you know, I've often thought, been stopped myself from asking silly questions. So I know one thing that women do find annoying who've had infertility is after they've given birth, as a community midwife, we do need to speak to everyone about contraception. And I know that that's quite a tricky one, because obviously, if you've gone through fertility treatment, in your head, you're expecting to do that again, or thinking that perhaps you might not have any children, or, you know, there's a whole spectrum of things that people think. And then actually, we have a responsibility to discuss contraception with people, because people can get pregnant, even if they've had IVF before. But I do know that that can be quite challenging. And that I would feel the same, you know, if a community midwife came around my house and was like, oh, so you need to think about contraception. I'd be thinking, do you know what? If I got pregnant straight away, that would be bloody fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Chance to be a fine thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's ways of approaching it, right? So, you know, if you know that a baby, and like, I remember the community midwives came around to me and I pretty much said straight away, like, because I knew what was going to happen because I've spoken to other people in our community. And so I said straight away, you know, this is an IVF baby, like this is a longed for baby. And they started talking about contraception. And I said, look, I don't have any fallopian tubes, so we probably don't need to worry about that. And the community midwife went, you never know. And I was like, no, I do. I do. This is a tried and tested form of contraception.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. But I suppose if you've got to say it, you've got to say it.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely,
I mean,
fair enough. It was just the you never know. Like, before that, it was fine. But the you never know really got me. And then I think my aunt came around about half an hour later and said the exact same thing.
But then, like, now you're going to have, in your head, if you're having sex and you're like, the midwife's voice ringing in your ear going, hey, but Emma, hey, you know.
You never know.
And you're like,
I do know.
Maybe those tubes would have grown back.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
Hey, I have Googled in the last year at least once.
No,
chances of conceiving naturally, 1%.
Hey, that's 1%.
Yeah.
Stranger things have happened, maybe. Well, Sophie, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and chatting about what it's like working as a midwife when you're infertile. It's it must be very difficult at times. And hopefully, if anyone's listening that's in a similar position, this will make you feel better.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, good luck with your pregnancy, mate.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back.
We held held our breath for a very long time just
then. Guys.
just trying to think of ways to sign off the podcast. This isn't just the same thing every week. That's the end of the podcast.
It is the end of the podcast. This is the fact of the moment.
Yeah.
And we hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
We've certainly enjoyed recording this. And we shall, as always, see you next week.
We will. When we will be speaking to...
Speaking to?
We will be speaking
to... We're speaking to someone really cool.
We will be speaking to Krina Devon, who is going to talk to us, or has talked to us, actually, about cancer and infertility and then surrogacy.
Yeah, it's a real twisty-turny one.
Mm, it's a real twisty-turny long one as well.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's kind of a bumper edition.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll enjoy it though. It's pretty excellent.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Until next week.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.